Groups of people caused social disturbances on the streets, burned copies of the Holy Quran, harassed veiled women, and set mosques, religious congregational halls, and private cars on fire. According to a statement released by the Iranian Intelligence Ministry, the rioters have been backed by Western regimes and their mercenary media, who disseminated misinformation and distorted the sequence of events that led to Amini's death, even before the official investigation into the incident concludes. Also, the intelligence ministry said 9 people from Germany, Poland, Italy, France, the Netherlands, Sweden, and other countries have been arrested for their role in the riots. From the very beginning, different Western media began a campaign against Iran, voicing support for the rioters. That's why they have remained silent for years about the strict sanctions imposed on Iran. Meanwhile, a teenage girl named Zainab Essa Majid al-Khazali was killed during American military drills near a U.S. military camp close to the international airport in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. There was an effective blackout on the death in Western media. So why are they refusing to show the same sensibility about Zainab's death? Seemingly, what matters most is creating turmoil in the stable nations in West Asia. Shortly after the death of Mahsa Amini, allegations of mistreatment and even torture surfaced on social media platforms, and Western media outlets lost no time in picking up the story and willfully distorting it. Before any official statement was made, Iran was accused of deliberate killing, and Mahsa was brutally killed by Iranian police was the talk of the town. Unsurprisingly, these headlines come as part of a systematic campaign to attack Iran and cause turmoil in the country.
There have been more anti-government protests in the Iranian capital, Tehran.
Just a moment ago, protests spreading in the country of Iran over the death of a young woman earlier this month.
The protests in Iran.
In addition, for years, the West, particularly the United States, has been trying to stop Iran's progress by using economic sanctions, military threats, cyber attacks, and assassinations. In his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said the U.S. and its allies' main problem is a strong and independent Iran and the country's progress. He pointed to the country's progress in all sectors, efforts aimed at facilitating domestic production, activation of knowledge-based companies, and the country's ability to neutralize Western sanctions. The leader said that enemies are gravely mistaken in their calculations, and their plots will not yield anything at all. And he's right. Iranians once again foiled the enemy's plots after huge crowds of people took to the streets across Iran to denounce acts of vandalism and desecration of Islamic sanctities by rioters, sending a strong message that Iran's security and stability is the most important issue.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, thought regulation. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the effect of the thought regulations in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that human beings have the habit of thinking and planning for something in his mind. Therefore, if there are some regulations, if there is a discipline in thinking and the thoughts are being regularized according to the priorities and the things that we need to do, the things get disciplined in our life. We know that we must have this discipline in our individual life as well as in our social life. And when we talk about the social life and individual life, there are different things that we need to do. For example, what time should I wake up? What time should I pray? What is the time for the breakfast? And if I'm going to the university or a school or a college, or maybe I'm going to the work, how many hours do I need to spend there? Is there any time for my family? Is there any time for myself? So when I need to think about all these things when I am living as an Islamic, I'm having an Islamic lifestyle. Why? Because Islam gives importance to every single aspect of the life. And when it gives importance to every single aspect of the life, it gives importance to the way I think as well, the way I discipline my daily routine, the way I schedule my daily routine. Therefore, it is very important that I give a discipline, I give a regulation to my thoughts, to way I plan, the way I think. And if I am succeeded in making true plans, making right plans, making a good schedule, and to think in a good way, in a right way, then obviously I am a successful person. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of thought regulation in the Islamic lifestyle. And we said that there must be a discipline or regulation in our thinking or the thoughts that we have. Therefore, when we need to have something, if we want to perform something, if we want to do some action, there is a process, and this process must be followed, that we think first and then we perform. Even about the sayings, it is said that before you speak, you must think. So it is because that if I can discipline, if I can have some regulations or discipline for my thoughts, I can have a better life. For example, when I'm thinking about my daily schedule, my daily routine, how much time do I spend for my work and how much time do I give to my family? Because my family is also important. On top of that, the main thing is my own life. Do I have any time for myself or not, where I can relax, where I can have some entertainment? Maybe I can spend some time with the friends, or maybe I want to be alone at that time. Therefore, all the actions that we do, all the actions that we perform, it is all under the way we think, the way we think about different things. Therefore, we need to set something, some regulations, that when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created us, obviously He did not allow us to think freely about anything. There are some limitations. We must control our mind. Imam Ali alayhi salam has said that the mind is just the things, the thoughts are like a bird, that if you leave it, it will flew wherever it want. But when you control it, when you put it in a cage, then obviously it cannot go anywhere where you're not allowed to. Therefore, we must control our thoughts according to the system of Islam, and to in order to have a positive and good and healthy life, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
On the day when Russian President Vladimir Putin was forced to carry out a special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent the West and NATO's expansionist policies, he also announced that goals of this operation are to denazify Ukraine and save the people of Donbass and Luhansk regions from the oppression of the Western-backed regime in Kiev. Since the beginning of the operation, Russian and Ukrainian officials have made many verbal threats against each other. But one of these threats that was widely reflected by the media is the recently the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky asked the West to carry out a preventive nuclear strike against Russia. Russian officials say this threat by Zelensky can endanger not only the security of the region, but also the security of the entire world. We have taken at the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Sputnik news agency writes, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov urged the entire world to take note of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's call for a preventive nuclear strike against Russia. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, Zelensky's statement about preventive nuclear strikes against Russia cannot be ignored by the international community, since they are nothing short of a call to start a world war, which will entail catastrophic repercussions. The Kremlin spokesman stressed that the United States and Britain, which de facto run Kiev, should bear responsibility for Zelensky's statement. Dmitry Peskov said, "These are United States and Britain that are the de facto directors of Kiev, manage its activities and talk about their intentions to defend Ukraine to the bitter end. Therefore, they are responsible and should be held accountable for this person's actions and statements." For her part, Maria Zakharova, a spokeswoman for the Russian Foreign Ministry, has warned that the West is fomenting a nuclear war, while an unstable Zelensky has turned into a monster. Maria Zakharova wrote on her Telegram channel, "Every single person on this planet should realize that Zelensky, a puppet and an unstable character who has been pumped with weapons, has turned into a monster who could be used to destroy the planet." Reacting to the Ukrainian president's remarks, former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev called for a preemptive craniotomy on Zelensky. Medvedev wrote on Telegram, "Zelensky announced the need for preventive nuclear strikes on Russia. Psychiatrists should perform a preemptive craniotomy on this idiot before he causes more trouble for his people and everyone else." Speaking at Australia's Lowy Institute via video link, Volodymyr Zelensky urged NATO to launch preemptive strikes on Russia instead of waiting for Russia's nuclear strikes. Zelensky said, "What should NATO do? It should eliminate the possibility of Russia using nuclear weapons. But what is important, I once again appeal to the international community as it was before 24th of February. Preemptive strikes are important so that they know what will happen to them if nuclear weapons are used. It should not be vice versa, as is to wait for Russia's nuclear strikes." Russia Today explains about the same story. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said on Friday, 7th of October, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's remark about a preemptive strike on Russia confirms the threats coming from Kiev and the necessity of the special military operation. Sergei Lavrov said via video link at a session of the United Party's Commission within the framework of the International Interparty Forum of Environmental Policy and Sustainable Growth. Lavrov said, recently, Volodymyr Zelensky urged his Western overlords to deliver a preemptive nuclear strike on Russia. By doing so, this person essentially showed the entire world more evidence of the threats emanating from Kiev and why the special military operation was launched to neutralize it. Sergei Lavrov laughed off the maneuvers by Zelensky's various aides who sought to downplay the Ukrainian president's remarks. The Russian foreign minister emphasized, "We all remember how back in January he was talking about Ukraine's aspiration to obtain nuclear weapons. It turns out this idea is thoroughly stuck in his head." He stressed, "When we are talking about environmental safety, we cannot ignore those discussions that recently have been persistently escalating about the topic of the possible use of nuclear weapons. Especially concerning this, we cannot turn a blind eye to the reckless actions of the Kiev regime, which are aimed at creating risks of using various kinds of weapons of mass destruction." The Russian foreign minister Lavrov reiterated that the special military operation uncovered very alarming facts, including the presence of illegitimate military biological programs at laboratories established by the Pentagon in Ukraine, which involved experiments on developed forbidden chemical substances. Sergei Lavrov added, "Certainly, the very dangerous incessant strikes on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant continue." The TASS news agency has more about the same story, but from a different angle. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told reporters on Tuesday, 4th of October, that the vast majority of countries in the world understand that Moscow is right in the situation around Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov said, "I assure you, the vast majority of countries understand that we are right perfectly, but, well, objectively speaking, not all of them have the courage and strength to speak frankly about it. Still, an overwhelming majority of countries refuse to support the steps that the West is taking in the economic sphere and the overall sanctions pressure on Russia." According to the Russian foreign minister, the West, immersed in an anti-Russian frenzy, feels a lack of strong arguments in support of its position and seeks to intimidate all other countries, first and foremost, the developing countries of Asia, Africa and Latin America, using threats and blackmail to make them take a position condemning Russia. Sergei Lavrov noted that it was further proof of the collective West's weak position. The Russian foreign minister said, "If you believe that you're right, you should explain what you think about certain international developments and let other people decide for themselves, like adults, whose arguments are more convincing in this case, whether it's Russia and the residents of Donbass and Ukraine who are unwilling to remain under the rule of a neo-Nazi regime, or it's the collective West who has proclaimed Ukraine a beacon of democracy and pledged to fight until the last Ukrainian in order to weaken Russia as much as possible or maybe even divide it." Sergei Lavrov added, "Ukrainian officials are no longer hiding their neo-Nazi identity." He said, "Ukrainian officials are unabashedly displaying their neo-Nazi character, openly calling for slaughtering of Russians worldwide."
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Youth Station. This is Asma, your humble host, and here with me I have my dear co-host,
Zainab Askari. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How are you, Asma?
Just fine. Well, life is moving. We have to move as well.
Yes.
So we're going with the flow.
Yes.
Well, we are having a day that is called the Day of Senior Citizens.
All right.
Do you know that?
We don't have that, unfortunately.
So we have it. We have the day for elderly people who are like the diamonds the society.
So nice that you have a day for them.
Yeah.
We have a day for lovebirds.
Yeah.
We have a day for males. We have a day for fathers. We have a day for mothers.
So
But unfortunately, we don't have a day for senior
citizens. So you must have it.
Since I come from Kashmir, we don't have that.
Some people say to their elderlies that your time has passed. You have done your things and now you no longer have such a very effective role in society. So unfortunate.
So Asma, why SBU is this unfortunate?
For people say such things to elderlies?
Yeah.
Because, you know, these people once have been young. And I usually, when I look at them, I see myself because some years ahead and I would be just in their place.
Yeah.
So those gray hairs that is going to get into my head or for men into their face is going to talk a lot. That means that this person is experienced enough, is full of knowledge enough to teach me as a young person the trick of the trade, which is living.
Yeah.
So I guess it is unfortunate that many people do not consider the value of these people. I guess some people do not care about the other citizens. They do not care that as we have a young person in this society, we have another person who also needs care and attention, that is an old person.
Actually, the world, the changing world, the pace it's changing at is beyond our imagination.
Yeah, of course.
And this changing world has taught us that you are important.
Selfishness.
You yourself are important.
And some people think that they're not going to get old.
And you're not... No. If you're basically taking care of old, even in your home, you're not going to enjoy your youth today.
Wow, which is so bad.
Be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
This is the changing world that's teaching us. But actually, have we been taught in Islam like that? No.
Yeah, we have to respect them.
There's respect, and there's one of the hadiths from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, who says that these elderly people, if you have one in home, is a source of blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and there's going to be so much mercy on you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to learn from the experiences.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I mean, I had some guest in my home for some 3 months.
Yeah.
Who was a senior citizen. And I so much learned from the experiences. I would just go and discuss. I would make tea for him.
Yeah.
Then I would sit.
Yeah, it's very nice.
And go for discussions. And I would learn the treasures of life.
Yeah.
I would learn from the mistakes they would do. Mm-hmm. Like senior citizens, if you go and sit with them, have a cup of coffee with them, actually you're making them feel better. And as long as you're not going to separate it from them, Allah is showering his blessings on you.
Exactly.
And then even they're going to feel better. Even you're going to learn from the mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
They would tell you.
You feel that bliss, you know?
Yeah.
Then it's very interesting that from that chit-chat, very little talk that you have with those old people, you would feel some sort of release.
I would always prefer to go. I mean, I was invited as a poet to one of the Iranian cities, Shahr-e Khurd.
Yeah.
So
one of the cities in Iran.
One of the cities in Iran. I was invited there as a poet. So there were so many big personalities, big, like, you know, of Iran, literary personalities who were invited because it was a poetry
gathering.
So among all those personalities who were very, very young or very, very, like, somewhere elderly, I chose to sit or have lunch with a person who was who was elderly of all. It was Professor Azar Sher, if I don't make a mistake in pronouncing his name. He's a professor in Tehran University in Arabic language and literature. And I would sit with him. He was the senior citizen over there. He was the, like, elderly of all. And I told him, so I would love to learn from you.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm from different culture. I have different...
It's always like this. Yeah.
Tell me, give me some advices.
Yes.
So, you know, these people, when you sit with them, you give them a sense of you're alive.
Yeah.
You live in this world. You matter a lot. You value. We value you. We respect you. It's not just standing up and sitting down for them. It's actually sitting with them and talking with them.
Yeah.
And they would give you advice, as I tell you, Asma, that they are, they those advices
will value, do wonders.
Value billions of dollars. Yeah. I swear, those advices these senior citizens can give you, those value more than those billions of dollars. And it will take you life to learn those. And then at that old age, you say to yourself, oh, I wish I knew this thing very, very early in my life. I would, like I say to myself, you know, like.
Yeah, it happens right now at this age. I sometimes tell to myself, see, why should you have done that at that age?
Yes, I wish I knew this thing very, very early. So you would know things, a lot of things, treasure some things very, very early in your life when you discuss and sit with these elderly people.
Yeah, that is very true. So we're talking about the dear elderlies who are living in our society everywhere. Though we are a youth station, we sometimes honor the existence of these elderlies in our life. That's why we're having this session for them. We're devoting that full-heartedly to the elderlies so that they know they're dear and they're so much respected. Let's go for a short interval and we'll be back in no time.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Youth Station. I am Asma, and here with me I have Zainab. Yes, we're enjoying our time talking about the elderlies, the senior citizens that are living alongside us.
Asma, we have a quote in Urdu.
That's, which is?
Umar bachpan ki, dil bachpan ka. Umar is age.
Age, yeah.
Bachpan is a number for 55.
Uh-huh.
Umar bachpan ki, dil bachpan ka. Dil is heart. Bachpan is childhood.
So when you grow old, you become like a child.
No, it is like, even if you're 55, live in your childhood.
Yeah,
like, it's your mentality that matters. But you know, you have so many people, young people around who live like who have already become old.
Yes.
Who's so lazy. Yes. Or so inactive. Mm-hmm. So what do you say about them?
What if I'm one of them?
Then we would love to know. How does it feel like to be old in a very young age?
Well, it happens sometimes. When you are 30, you feel like you are 50 or maybe 60.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that happens, actually, because if I want to explain, then it would turn into a novel. A long novel that's not going to end. But then I would say it's not just like feeling old. Sometimes, even in your youth, you would feel, you would go through a phase of inactiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would have a touch upon that age that is going to come. And then you would understand that, okay, if I get older, I'm not going to be able to do this or that. You know, Zainab, sometimes when I consider my abilities right now, my energy right now, and I compare it to 10 years ago, I see a drastic change.
Okay.
Like, I always tell myself that asthma seize the day and do your best from today, because when tomorrow comes, you're not going to have the same abilities.
Same ability and energy.
Yeah. You're not going to have the same interest in everything.
What I would advise always my sisters. Don't be lazy today.
Yeah.
The energy, the enthusiasm, the passion you have today, you're not going to have that tomorrow.
Yeah. You know what I do? I usually tell my little brother that, okay, go enjoy your day right now. Make the best out of it.
Now.
And he comes to tell me that, okay, now you're pretending to be my grandmother and you're giving me advice as if you're so much older than me.
But that's what the experience is.
Yeah. This is experience. You know, when you're at 20... Maybe it's offensive when you hear that from other people, that they tell you, okay, do this and that, do not do that, do not do blah, blah, blah. But when you get older, you understand that those people were so much in love with you for telling you those things, because they knew it, that when you get older, you would no longer have the same abilities, the same interests and motivations, Zainab, even.
Exactly. But there are so many things, Asma, that we keep out there for the old age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I say to myself, not me, but there are so many people who say to themselves, like, well, let me work today. Let me only amass degrees and money today.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow I'll go for, like, reading books. Or reading Quran.
Yeah. They
reading
would leave
the Quran, especially doing the prayers, doing extra prayers and all. But as you grow old, as per like medically, when you're 65 above, you're actually entering the old age. But technically, you're 73 and above, you're old. But then since you enter that age medically, you don't have the energy to go for recommended prayers.
Yeah, exactly.
We have often seen these elderly or old people, they give... Have you seen that, Asma? Like, I have seen they give more time to Allah. They give more time to Quran.
Yeah.
Maybe in that age, they realized this was the thing.
That is very true.
This
is very true. Because at the end of the day, when you get older, you would understand that people you love are not going to stay for you.
And we have so many ahadith that say that the worship of a young is much better than the worship of so many worships of like
elderly. Because at that age, you of course would come to the point that
of realization.
Yeah.
But as young you are, you have to realize that what is important and what is unimportant. Like, especially, Asma, if I go back to time and if I'm told that go back into your teens, the thing I will do over there, what I do right now, is I'll read books.
Yeah.
I think it was very late to pick this option.
Yes, Zainab, reading books is something that I... When I now compare myself to when I was 15, 17...
When you were not reading books.
I'm a book freak, really, but when I compare my abilities right now to my abilities back in time, then I would say, oh my God, I'm getting aged.
Oh, no. It's actually, you say, when you read a couple of books right now, then you say, oh my God, it added to my knowledge right now. Had I given this time in my teens,
I would have
been a different personality.
I wish I have read this book before.
I would have set the world on fire.
Yes. Yes, the world would have changed into a better world
exactly.
If I have read that book earlier.
Yes.
So we're talking totally about senior citizens of our society. We know that they're respected. We know that they're all dears, though they might have some changed appearance, but they might be still young in their heart. And usually age does not matter.
What matters is your perspective of looking at life.
Yeah, let this be the closing sentence to this session, that age does not matter. What matters is respectability.
Your perspective of life.
Yeah, your perspective. And also you should keep it in mind that one day you're getting to get old.
Yeah.
So getting old is not a sort of plague. It's not something extraordinary.
Disastrous.
That comes like it happens only to aliens.
Yeah.
No, one day I'm going to
grow.
Have those gray hairs and I'm going to turn into a wrinkled woman. So it's going to happen to everyone.
And now you remind me of Shakespeare, who says in one of the sonnets, love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds.
Wow, that is so lovely. Thank you for mentioning that.
Rosy cheeks, yeah, rosy lips are time's fool.
Yeah,
he says that in the first verse, and then he says this.
Very nice. Now I'm flying in the world of poetry. So thank you for mentioning that. And thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. Be wary of Allah and settle your differences. The third is something universal that applies to whatever it is you are doing. And it means to do whatever is good and avoid whatever is bad. Obey Allah and His Apostle by following their commands. Should you be faithful, then you will do all of this. The issue of faith, this pledge of the heart, this bond of thought, belief and mind to a single issue, to a single person, to a single pole, to a single core, this thing we call faith cannot come about simply by these means. Simply by a person feeling an attachment in their heart. No, the time when faith truly inheres in a person, when it becomes actualized, is when that person acts on it. Then, and only then, can a person claim that they are truly faithful, when they fulfill the requirements of faith and they act in accordance with faith. Then they can say they are truly faithful. That they truly believe, because it is only then that their life and the very fabric of their being differs from someone who denies Allah and rejects the truth.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today, what is the difference in behavior between someone who denies Allah and someone who claims to believe in Him? They both do wrong. They are both absorbed by the materialistic concerns until their last breath. They are both willing to trade all virtue and all goodness for two more morrows, for two more morsels, for two more breaths. The only difference is that one honestly says, I don't believe in God. The other claims that he believes in God. What kind of faith is this? The Quran is clear about what faith means. This is not some philosophical argument about which there can be doubt. If you truly believe, do these things. And one of these things is that you obey Allah and obey the Apostle, that you do as they command. What is God's command? It is self-evident that every person has certain duties and responsibilities, whether this is with regards to their own property, life and soul, or whether it is with regard to their relationship with other human beings, their relationship with Allah, their relationship with animals, or even their relationship with plants. If you obey Allah in all of these different fields of your life, then you can say you are a true believer. Otherwise, faith merely in the sense of feeling an attachment to some principle or cause, but without this attachment being reflected in one's words or deeds, in one's limbs or behavior, is of no use.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Unity from the viewpoint of the Noble Quran. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in the Unity Week. The Unity Week is the period between the 12th and 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal. It was Imam Khomeini's initiative to call this period as the Unity Week to help bring the hearts of Muslims together, as Sunni Muslims believe that the 12th of this month is the birthday of the Prophet of Islam, while Shia Muslims maintain that it falls on the 17th of the month. No doubt, unity is the only way to empower the Islamic world against the incessant assaults and conspiracies of enemies. In view of this, most of Muslim scholars have understood that besides the practice of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, blessings of God upon them, the Noble Quran is the main source of unity and inspiration of solidarity among Muslims. Stay tuned, dear listeners, as we are going to review some of the unity-inducing teachings of this heavenly scripture. Unity has been highly emphasized in the Noble Quran. In fact, there are more than 50 ayahs in the Quran which speak about unity and show the ways to reach unity. Interestingly, the number of the ayahs warning against disunity is nearly the same number. The issue of unity has been mentioned in the Quran with concepts like hold fast, cooperating, reforming, correcting the efforts of people, united ummah, the middle ummah, brotherhood, and so on. And these ayahs include warnings and commands which lead to materialization of unity and solidarity among Muslims. For instance, in Ayah 92 of Surah Anbiya, God says, "Indeed, this ummah of yours is one ummah, and I am your Lord, so worship me." In Ayah 52 of Surah Mu'minun, also we read, "Indeed, this ummah of yours is one ummah, so be wary of me." According to these ayahs, all Muslims shape one ummah and should move in the way of worshipping God. They should set aside differences not to pave the ground for enemies. Unity is so important and effective that God says to Muslims in Ayah 103 of Surah Al-Imran, "Hold fast to Allah's cord altogether and do not be divided. And remember Allah's blessing upon you when you were enemies. Then He brought your hearts together. So you become brothers with His blessing. And you were on the brink of a pit of fire, whereat He saved you from it. Thus, does Allah clarify His sons for you so that you may be guided?" According to narrations, this ayah was revealed about the two tribes, Aus and Khazraj, which were engaged in war and bloodshed for over 100 years. They were deprived of many moral characteristics, and it was sword which ruled between them. Thus, the noble Quran brought their hearts close together and made them brothers to march in the course of the bright Islamic culture and civilization. The Noble Quran in many ayahs points to unity and Islamic brotherhood. For example, Ayah 46 of Surah Anfal reads, "And obey Allah and His Apostle and do not dispute, or you will lose heart and power will be gone. And be patient. Indeed, Allah is with the patient." Paying attention to this ayah and some similar ayahs makes it quite clear that unity is closely related to obedience of God and Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Reaching this phase of perfection and understanding will materialize only through patience and perseverance. The Quran asks Muslims here to give up differences as they will weaken them and will destroy their dignity and awe. Dear listeners, now it has become evident to every alert and wakeful Muslim that the Islamic Ummah can survive and go from a strength into a strength only through unity against the sworn enemies. Muslims should increase their knowledge of the Quran and the teachings of the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt to keep their self-esteem and solve great problems. Unity of the monolithic Islamic Ummah is the only way to triumph over the global arrogance and Zionism as the main enemies of Islam and Muslims.
Thank you. یوسف جلالی تهران
روباشاوید گازا
جروم هیوز بروسلز
سعید پورزا لندن
رشا سگلم استانبول
سید امین عالمی کابل
شهان بات ایندین ادمنیسترد کشمیر
Round the world with reporters.
I'm heading with Donbass militia fighters to a frontline position outside the city of Donetsk. Ukrainian soldiers are only 70 meters away. I'm told not to film the skyline or any prominent markers so as not to give away their positions. The cramped living quarters are dark and dank. A fighter with a call sign Yidra, meaning the otter, gives me a tour.
We live here not in trenches but under concrete. These are destroyed buildings that we've old basements. It is all dug out by hands, down the narrow passageways and understand what it's like to be a miner. We live here, breathe this air. You can't survive artillery any other way. At least you can hide from snipers, but not from artillery. Big caliber artillery too.
He shows me a picture sent to him by his daughter. I asked him what has motivated him to fight in these conditions for the last 8 years.
Конечно, потому что я здесь живу.
Because this is where I live. My mother lives 25 kilometers from here. I speak Russian. My mom and dad speak Russian. I was a miner here. It's my land.
A young fighter, barely 18. The grueling nature of this war is bringing a seamlessly endless wave of young men on both sides to fight. Thousands won't return home.
While the Ukrainians have been making advances in the north of the Donbass and the Kherson region, here on the front lines just outside Donetsk, it's very much trench warfare, where success is measured in meters rather than kilometers. It's pretty quiet here today. We have heard some small arms fire and some artillery, but I've been told that these trenches we're in now have changed hands many times over the last 8 years of war here.
A motivational poster. It reads, Donbass was never made to kneel by anybody, and nobody will be able to do it.
We understand that the USA are ruling this circus. Europe needs to stop being their vassals. America doesn't care about others. Their only way is to be at war, and they build their domestic policy out of conflicts with other countries. In Syria, they played the card of radical Islam, and now they're playing the card of fascism. They need war's blood and cruelty. And they signed Europe up to it, too. They missed only one thing, that Russia will not stop fighting.
While there is raging ethnic hatred of Russians in Ukraine, after interviewing dozens of soldiers and civilians in Donbass, despite the war, I've yet to hear any ethnic hatred of Ukrainians.
We don't blame all Ukrainian people. Ukrainian people are our friends and relatives. Those who study this understand that one-third of Europe are cousins. Ukrainians, Belarusians, Slovaks, Poles, and Slovenians. They're all Slovak people. Ordinary people are not to blame for this. We think they're just corrupted by evil.
Out many Ukrainians who want peace negotiations with Russia, but are scared to speak up. Indeed, President Zelensky was elected in 2019 of war in the East. But the sad truth is set to escalate further. Peace in Ukraine has never looked less likely than it does now. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Linked hand in hand, thousands of men and women surround the British Houses of Parliament, a symbolic act in solidarity with a man they call the world's foremost political prisoner.
It's obvious for any observer, for anyone who is fairly looking at this situation, that this is an enormous, monumental injustice of a man who is being persecuted by the authorities who are using the coercive powers of the state in order to try to punish him for doing the right thing.
That right thing was exposing American crimes and conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, for which he's wanted by the U.S. government. The now 51-year-old Australian, co-founder of whistleblower website WikiLeaks, has been locked up in a maximum security prison near London since April 2019.
To his many supporters, Julian Assange is an anti-establishment hero who's been victimized, and that his prosecution is a politically motivated assault on journalism and on free speech.
Organized by the Don't Extradite Julian Assange campaign, the human chain is not just about securing one man's freedom.
This has implications for pretty much every journalist who publishes material critical of the United States. If he is actually extradited and they succeed, then any other journalist in the UK or from around the world could face the same fate as Julian Assange, which would, of course, would be a strong discouragement to them to publish any critical material, and we get something like a chilling effect, basically, whereby the press ceases to scrutinize foreign policy of the most powerful nation on the planet.
And that powerful nation, under the Trump administration, it was revealed last year, plotted to kidnap or kill Assange as he sheltered in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Earlier this year, the UK government approved the father of two's extradition to the United States to face criminal charges, which carry a maximum sentence of 175 years. An appeal to the UK's High Court is underway. Assange's supporters say they won't relent until he is unchained. Saeed Purza, London.
People have rallied across the Yemeni capital Sana'a as well as other major cities to celebrate Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary amid the highly alarming situation in Yemen. This comes days after the warring sides failed to renew a ceasefire agreement, which ended earlier in October.
The relationship between the Yemeni people and Prophet, it is narrated in history books as well as the holy book Quran. Yemenis are the first to embrace Islam. Old relationship. The anniversary of Prophet Muhammad's birth has become a holiday for all Yemenis. There is no single year without this gathering.
Participants say they celebrate Prophet Muhammad's values and principles by honoring his birth anniversary, especially amid the Saudi-led war, which requires Yemenis to follow the Prophet's footsteps in the face of the coalition's tyranny.
The occasion of the Prophet's birth anniversary becomes more important year after year. It has become the first occasion and the first aid for Yemenis, although it's an occasion that all Muslims celebrate. Unfortunately, only Yemenis celebrate this occasion with this beautiful gathering.
This day is an annual event in which Yemenis renew their relationship with Prophet Muhammad and their love for the Prophet, as he inspires us to confront the enemies of the nation. Today is also a political occasion from which the position of Yemenis is announced by the leader of the revolution, Abdul Malik al-Houthi.
Yemenis have always been one of the largest populations in the world to commemorate Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary, as this day resembles their culture, which approves their love and loyalty to the Prophet.
The Iranology Foundation in Tehran hosted this conference to introduce Iran from the perspective of Iranian experts, as opposed to Western accounts of the country's culture and civilization. The biennial event brought together historians, anthropologists, and sociologists, aspects of Iran's culture.
The Iranology Foundation has been trying to introduce Iran as it is to the world. Organized summits and conferences on Iran's history to study the country from the viewpoint of Iranian. Here we have permanent galleries showcasing Iran's handicraft and art. We also hold classes for students who are major in Iranology.
Iran is known for its diverse demographic makeup, which has allowed Persians, Turks, Kurds, Baluchis, and Arabs to live together for centuries, each with their unique culture, costumes, language, and lifestyle.
The West's approach on Iran is not based on realities. The so-called Orientologists in the West have maintained a top-down approach toward Iran. Fortunately, today this mentality has been abolished. Our country is full of beauties, from its four seasonal weather and amazing landscapes to its history of peaceful coexistence of different ethnicities and religions. These are the realities that are not reflected in the West.
With a population of more than 80 million, Iran is situated on a geopolitical area, bordering the Caspian Sea to its north and the Persian Gulf to its part of what experts refer to as the heartland of natural resources, including those to exploitation by different countries, the UK and the former Soviet Union.
Experts here believe Western media portray Iran as an isolated country and ignore its beauties. They believe there's a need to reintroduce the country to the world using the pen of Iranian experts to shed light on the bright side of Iran, from its mesmerizing nature to its rich culture and history. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Okay.
New jobs data in the United States showed a collapse of 1.1 million job openings, the biggest one-month crash ever outside of the COVID lockdown. It's also the first increase in the unemployment rate since April 2020, and that has many so-called recession deniers being forced to reconsider. The United States has had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth, which is the standard definition of economic recession.